Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
All right, good evening, good evening. It is Peach State Pandemonium for Thursday, May 23rd, 2013. This is Michael Norris. As always, I am joined by my compadres, the Pressure Washer King, Bobby Simmons, and Jerry Weed Eater Oates. How are you guys doing this evening?
Well, I went and bought me 3 Weed Eaters. I'm waiting on the call. And when I get the call, I'm going by and pick Bobby up. We're going to take our new equipment and try it out.
What do you think they have a Weed Eater Championship and the belt is like a spool of wire, plastic
really
cord on it?
I had forgotten about all that. You said it again. It's like thinking about my T-shirts and McGuire twins. It just won't go away now.
Hey, you got to be known for something now.
Hey, why not?
Being North American champion, you know, being Central States champion, all that's nothing. You know,
that means nothing. Giving away T-shirts and being one of McGuire twins, I guess. You
know. What is the weather like in Georgia? I hope it's not what it's been down here.
Well, I called and Greg, they say it's hot in Atlanta and Macon. It's like in the 70s here.
It's been in the 80s here, and it's supposed to be in the 80s all weekend and clear.
Well, it reached 94 at one point today here. Normally by this time of the season, I'm acclimated to the heat because I've been out with the shows and everything. And man, I've been out the last 2 days in it, and it has been absolutely miserable. I went to Pensacola yesterday and had lunch with Bill Bowman and Roberto Soto, and as always, had a blast with the two of them. So you have not lived until you've ridden in a car with Roberto Soto playing 60s music and him changing the words to all of it to something dirty.
No, he wouldn't do that.
It usually revolves around a certain part of a woman's anatomy.
I got an email from Roberto. He couldn't believe it.
Yeah, he said he'd emailed you, and he was mad because you hadn't emailed him back or hadn't responded.
Well, I certainly did. I certainly did.
When did you do it? Yesterday or the day before?
I think it wasn't yesterday. It was the day before.
He wants everybody to respond to him right away.
Well, I just don't sit on my email. I'm sorry, sir.
Oh, man. Well, tonight is going to be a very special show. And I'm sure there's going to be a point somewhere along this line that we're going to be, you know, kind of sad or whatever, but since we're doing this for Ronnie West, I know he's up there watching us, and I know he wants us to tell stories and laugh and have a good time because that's what he would do. So that's my intent tonight. We're going to be joined by his sons, Rodney and Brent, and also Bill Bowman, Bill Turner, Bo James, Bill Dundee, and Chris Connors, who is our director and ringmaster from the Cole Brothers Circus, is going to be joining us very late in the show because he's actually got 2 shows. He's in the middle of the first one right now. And, the first one just ended. He'll be doing the second show starting at 7:30. And then from there, he'll be done about 9:30, and then I'll call him and get him on the air. So he was overwhelmed that we asked him to do it, and is very much looking forward. He's had known Ron probably, well, they've both been with Cole Brothers 12 years, so they started out together on the Cole Brothers circus, but Chris has been in the circus business his whole life, so it's
Well, he deserves to be on.
Yes, sir, and he was thrilled to be able to do something, celebrate Ron, so, and he called Ron Dad all the time. So it's going to be a good show, and like I said, I just want us to tell stories, probably some ones we've told a dozen times before, but they bear repeating, so don't hold back. Let's laugh and have a good time.
Well, I got one for you. I'm going to tell this at his service Saturday, but I'll tell you because I don't know how many people up there will hear it. But anyway, we run Somerville, Georgia, up above Rome. And I went up there to referee, and Ronnie was running the town, and I rode with him. And the first time we took Abdullah up there, and, I mean, we had people hanging from the rafters in this little gym. It was in the main event, and Abdullah was, I don't even remember who he was working with, but he had this, you know, he had his fork or his coat hanger or whatever he had at the time, and he's working on somebody, and I'm fussing at him, and he looked at me, and he went, Bobby, he said, there's a mark coming in the ring. And I said, okay. I said, let me know when he sticks his head through the ropes. And I was standing there, and I done got all tensed up. He said, now. And I turned around to hit the guy. And just as I went to hit the guy disappeared. And I looked down, and Ronnie had reached up and grabbed this guy from behind by the shirt collar and by the belt buckle and snatched him off the ring. And he took off running with him. The guy's bent over double, and Ronnie's got him by the shirt collar and the belt buckle or the back of his pants by the belt, and he's running him. And he run him all the way to the back of the building. There was a set of doors back there that was closed. And Ronnie took this guy, and he just used his head for a battering ram, and he just pushed him right through them doors. And last time I saw the guy, he was tumbling butthole overhead out the door, and Ronnie just closed the door. He turned around, waved at me, and I just waved back and turned around, went on doing what I was doing. When we got ready to leave that night, we went outside, and we got in the car. And about the time we started the engine up, we heard something behind us, and we turned around and looked, and here's this guy behind us. He was riding a bicycle. And he got off that bicycle, and he threw it down on the ground, and he balled his fist up, and he said, if you two get out of that car, he said, I'm going to whoop y'all's butt right here on this driveway. And I looked at Ronnie, and Ronnie looked at me, and Ronnie reached over and put his car in reverse, and we backed right over to the guy's bicycle as we was leaving.
You come to find out he's the chief of police.
God, I hope not. We just backed right over his car or his bicycle. Oh. I'll give you one more. Jerry might have been there at this one. I don't know. Some fan tried to jump in the ring in Savannah one night. And Ronnie seen him coming through the ropes, and Ronnie ran over and hit the guy, and the guy fell down tied up in the ropes and on the apron, and Ronnie's kicking him. And he was turning around hollering for somebody to come help him, and wasn't nobody paying no attention to him. And I don't know who all was in the ring, but I know Bobby Duncan was in there because he's the one that took the brunt of this. Ronnie kept hollering, help, come here, help. And he was just kicking the stew out of this guy, and the guy was fighting to get up. And the guy finally fought his way up and got by Ronnie, and he hit Bobby Duncombe right in the mouth. And, of course, that wasn't a good move on the guy's part because Duncan proceeded to just kill this guy. And but, yeah, Ronnie said he beat the guy till he couldn't punch and kick no more. He blew up. And said, wouldn't nobody come help him? And knowing Ronnie, you can imagine how he was. Excuse me, hello, come here.
Oh, man. I can't imagine Ronnie blowing up. He was so full of energy all the time. He was never still. You watch matches of him, and as the guys are working on the mat, he's along the ring ropes, and he's dancing. He'd kick one leg and back up two steps and kick the other leg and walk forward two steps and kick the other leg. I told him he looked like he was dancing all the time. Oh, man. Well, let me take a break real quick and play a couple of commercials, and then we get back. We'll get Brent and Rodney on with us first. So I'm going to play a couple of commercials, and we'll be right back.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows, to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first party you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
And get our first couple of guests on here. I got a brand new computer, guys, so if I screw up, I can't blame it on my computer anymore. It's just a pile of air. See if I get a free day commercial.
Well, you got to pay for that computer somehow.
Hey, Brandon, it's Michael Norris, Bobby Simmons, and Jerry Oates. Welcome to Peace Safe Pandemonium. How are you?
I am doing all right.
Oh, good, good. Let me, while I got you, let me try and get your brother real quick, and we'll tell some Ronnie West stories.
You know, it's a dangerous thing when you get both of them together.
This is true. Now, when you've got all three of us together, you were really in trouble.
Oh, I never got to have that pleasure. In fact, Brent and I have swapped emails, phone calls a time or two for the last 3 years, but have never met each other directly. Rodney, I met two seasons ago when he was doing Mobile.
Rodney Webb.
Rodney.
Hey.
Hey, it's Michael Norris, your brother Brent, Jerry Oates, and
Bobby
Simmons.
Sir.
All right, how are you doing?
We're doing good. We're doing good.
Well, good. Come together. I appreciate you guys letting us do this tribute to your dad, because I can't express how much we've all loved him, and just, oh man, it's something.
Well, we appreciate y'all's support. We thank y'all for doing this for him, because and everybody else who has called us and contacted us. We've had just tremendous support, and you don't know how much that means to us, really.
Well, your dad was a unique person. He was one of a kind, and I tell you, I never met anybody who loved life more than Ronnie West did. And it's just, it's hopefully it's rubbed off on me, and I'm going to do as I'll never fill his shoes on the circus, but I'm damn sure going to try. Let me put it that way. He taught
well, he's
me
a hard act to follow. I'll tell you, he's a hard act to follow. I've had to do some of his towns myself. And all you get done is asking, how's your father? How's Ron doing? Maybe talk to him later. And, I mean, eventually you just have to put him on the phone. You had to put him on the phone to him because they wouldn't, I mean, he was just hard. The next hardest one to follow was Bill Dundee. I mean, basically have to tell him, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to call. You're going to have to call and talk to these people. All they want to do is. Bombing New Jersey is the worst about that. How you find?
Oh, I know.
Well, is he not coming by? And I mean, they were on me bad. I was like, you're going to have to come by down here. They're not going to give up. And they're not going to stop until you come in. That's bad about that. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I mean, every town I did, you know, of course, with Ron being there as long as he was, he'd done just about every town at least once. And every town I've done since in the three seasons I've been with him, it's, where's Ron West?
Exactly right. I mean, that's everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah.
How's your father?
He never met.
Well, you're okay, but how's your father? Is he coming by? Do you think he might show up? I said, I don't know. I'll ask him. I said, this don't really make me feel good, but no. That's just the way it is. I had to follow him through, like I said, violent, and then Wilmington, North Carolina. I mean, that's a rough one too. They won't there for a while. They wouldn't accept anybody else except for him, and that's all it was to it. I mean, he really loved the show. He loved working. He loved working with people, all of his sponsors. Even though he was in the last county he was doing, he was doing Dulles, Virginia at the mall, but they just up the road 10 miles up, they're going to be in Ashburn in the fall.
Yeah.
And he'd already been over to visit the sponsor for that at the church up there, Dr.
Yeah.
Fred and all. Yeah. You know, he's a hard act to follow, let me tell you.
Well, you guys kind of followed not only with the circus, and for those that don't know, Rodney has been a marketing director for us in the past for Cole Brothers, and Brent is still our media buyer. He purchases all the radio spots, television spots, newspaper spots, and which is a
he's
tremendous.
He's smart enough to stay home, though, right?
Yes, I do. I do stay at home.
There you
and,
go. You're not living in a hotel 9 months out of the year.
No, hey. I get to stay at home.
See, Ronnie raised one smart kid anyway.
Hey, wait a second.
But you guys,
I know where you'll be. I know where you'll be Saturday. Let me just tell you that.
Well, now, don't you think, now, Dad did try to figure out several ways to buy the advertising and me go on the road.
I'm sure he did.
Oh, yeah. But you guys also did a lot of work in the wrestling business, along with Ron. You guys promoted. Brent, I know you were a ring announcer for several different promotions. At what point did you guys get interested in the wrestling business? At a young age, I would imagine.
Let's see. Diapers? That's when we got started. Diapers. I mean, we don't remember a day that we wasn't. We don't remember a day that we wasn't in the wrestling business or part of it. Dad actually started, I think, full time in 1970, but he was referee at age 14.
Yeah.
Jimmy Dykes was taking him on the ring truck, and Jimmy Dykes is the one that trained him how to referee, and he was with him on the ring truck. In fact, the first night he refereed, he was 14 years old. One of the wrestlers didn't show up, so Jimmy Dykes was taking the ring, and he would normally referee. So that particular night, Jimmy had to wrestle, and he said, "Hey, boy, come in here. You're going to wrestle your first matches tonight." And I was thinking maybe it was Pikeville, Tennessee that happened in, but he refereed for the first time at 14 years old. And even then, they kept asking him questions. He said, "Are you sure? Are you sure this is your first matches? Are you sure?" 14 years old, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't even smarten him up.
Nope. Yep, they thought he was already.
And Jimmy,
they asked him.
I met him in 1973, and I didn't think he was smart either.
Bobby and Jerry, I want you guys to listen to Rodney. Close your eyes, and does he not sound like Ronnie?
Oh, he looks like Ronnie, too.
He does.
We keep hoping he's going to outgrow it, but maybe not now.
I know what I look like eventually.
Yeah. I met Rodney 2 years ago here in Mobile. I came over. I was in Louisiana, but I came over to get something from the show. And he was a marketing director for Mobile 2 seasons ago.
Right.
And I didn't have to ask who's Rodney West or where's Rodney West. I looked at him and I said, "There's Ronnie West 30 years ago." I knew who I was looking for. It's amazing. But Brent got all the good looks, according to what Ronnie said.
Oh, well, that's another one. Okay, all right, I remember you.
Hey, Ronnie was saying as a compliment to Brenda because he said, "Brent looks like Brenda, and you look like him." So.
Well, it's good that I got the looks because I certainly didn't get no money.
Well, guys, I got a couple.
Yeah, we were.
Go ahead. Sure. Go ahead.
And I was going to talk about you're talking about wrestling. That's what we've been doing all week. We were talking about the road trips and who all has sat in the passenger seat of our cars going from Atlanta to Columbus TV into Griffin or Carrollton that night. And it was the who's who of wrestling. And Gordon Solie to Dick Murdoch, we never had more fun with Dick Murdoch. I'm telling you, he kept us laughing the entire time. And Jacques Rougeau and Wrestling 2 and Kevin Von Erich and Steve Kern, Ted DiBiase, I mean, the list, just Andre the Giant, the list of people who sit in the passenger seat of our car. And we just thought of that today. We were talking about that today.
And our hero, Mr. Wrestling 2.
Yep.
Made several trips with him, and it was a pleasure.
You had mentioned Andre the Giant. I'm sure you guys have heard the story about Bobby, helped me out with this one. Andre got drunk and was riding the horse on top
of the
Well,
that's riding the horse there on Cleveland Avenue, yeah. Had to go over there and get him off the horse. Listen,
the first
speeding ticket I ever got, Michael, Jerry,
yeah,
was in Ronnie West's car. Ronnie would change cars at the drop of a hat. If somebody came out with a new car and it was a different color or something, they came out, and this must have been about 1975, maybe 76. Ford came out with that Gran Torino in that silver and burgundy combination. So here comes Ronnie tooling up in one. And me and Wrestling 2, and every Wednesday we rode together. We went to Columbus together. We parked out there at a gas station, and the guy out there at the gas station thought we were yacht salesmen. We told him we had to go to Panama City every week and check on our yachts, and because we were always gone when he got there the next morning. We said, "We just go down there and come back, you know." So we were coming home that night, and Ronnie would – they would live – they'd get an apartment in Atlanta, and they'd stay 2 or 3 months, and they'd get homesick, and they'd move back to Cleveland.
That's right.
And then they'd come back to Atlanta, and then they'd stay 2 or 3 months, and they'd go back to Cleveland. And but Ronnie was, I mean, he was making that extra, I mean, it's extra what, I guess what, 100 and a quarter from Atlanta to Cleveland, something maybe?
Yes.
And he was doing extra $2.50 a day because he would go home every night. He'd let us out. We'd get out 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, depending on where we'd been, and then he still had that ride home. But we were coming from Columbus one night, and he was really, he was just exceptionally tired, so he tells me to drive. He said, you drive to Atlanta, and he said, then I'll drive on in to home, you know. And I said, well, okay. Well, what he didn't tell me was he disconnected the speedometer because he didn't want to put the miles on it and run the warranty out. So I'm tooling up the interstate, and I got my first speeding ticket because he disconnected the speedometer.
That little cheat will probably help him with that.
You know. Oh.
Well, guys, I got a couple more that I'm going to get on the line with us. But,
sure.
Knew your dad when he was probably not far from having started out. He knew him well before you guys came along, so let me get him on the line with us.
Sure.
Bill Bowman and Joe Turner, you with us?
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, I'm here.
Bill. Okay, Bill, you with us?
I'm here.
All right. We got, besides Bobby and Jerry and myself, we got Brent and Rodney West with us. And we're telling some Ron Well stories. I'm sure you two know some. I know Joe knows some.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not he can tell them is another story.
We can't be telling no two-tone stories now, Joe.
Remember, Bill? Bill? Wasn't we the one that named you two-tone?
That was his
CB handle for
yes,
sure.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Yeah, like a dipstick in oil.
No, we had a lot of fun with Ronnie. He was real young, and Bill and I took him under the wing and spent a lot of time with him, and we enjoyed it. He was a lot of fun to be around, and we done the first juice job for him, and we done a lot of things up and down the road, just like up in East Tennessee there. I forgot what town it was, South the city of one of them up there. But anyway, we was always picking at their mama, too, Brenda. By the way, hi guys. And anyway, we was always picking at Brenda. And I'm walking across the auditorium, and I had a giant-sized Coke. And Brenda was sitting right on the end where you go in the dressing room, so I put one foot in front of the other like I stumbled on it. It's going to make it like I'm going to spill a Coke. And that if I didn't stumble and fall and pour a bit of it on her.
I guess they'll not let you operate the Cokes anymore.
No. Really embarrassed me. They was, you know, she wasn't used to being ribbed a whole lot then, you know, and picked on. So, but I'm sure she learned to be.
She run when you come.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. But I tell you one thing, Bill and I think both of Ronnie and Brenda, we think a lot of them. We always thought they were great friends.
I think back with the times with Ronnie, the first time I remember seeing him, we were in a small town. This is 1966, boys, and we were in a small town, and here comes the ring, and Ronnie's driving the truck, and he's got his dad with him. And he comes and asks Joe and I, you know, where's wrestling? And we said, you know, in the building there. He said, well, where am I supposed to put this ring? We said, we didn't know. And so it went on, and he set up the ring and went into the ring that night. And he had given the office had sent him a small letter and said, give to the Sky Brothers. And they gave us this, and it told us what to do. Because I guess they thought that your dad won with the program then. And so, anyway, Joe and I were kayfabe to him in the ring. And he got all excited because he knew what was going on, and we wouldn't, you know, correspond with him. So that was part of our deals with him. And his dad was ringing the bell on the outside. We had the privilege of meeting your grandfather and going to the place there in Cleveland, and with Ronnie working on the ring and all, and knowing him real well, and your grandmother. We enjoyed that. I'll tell you one or two quick stories. Ronnie was kind of pushing us in Cleveland, Tennessee. Anyway, he was booking it, and so we had got to this match at the National Guard Armory there, and we were kind of getting over pretty well there. We were working with, I can't think the names of them now, the Green something. But anyway, the match was hot and heavy, and we'd got a little color. And Ronnie said, "I want color too." I said, "Ronnie, you sure?" So I took the little device out of my mouth. And anyway, we got into this big deal there, and he got color along with Joe and I and the Frank Martinez. And anyway, it got really hot and heavy. He turned around, and it was one of those shooters, and he went running over halfway to Brenda. Your mother passed out. Because Ronnie was so bloody and all, and she wanted to kill him after the matches, and she damn well sure wanted to kill Joe and I. Anyway, that was the first time that he got color. And I have a lot of memories with Ronnie and Brenda, and we love them to death.
Hey, you have been, Mr. Bill, you've been a great friend to my father. He spoke of you often and with great fondness, I'll just tell you. He really, really loved you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ronnie was in the ring in Cleveland, Tennessee one time with me, and it was time to start the match. And I told him, I said, "Hold on." I says, "There's a mic hanging over the ring." I said, "I need that mic." "What are you going to do?" I said, "I need the mic." So I got the mic down, and it was Harry Thornton, wasn't it, that was running that bill?
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, we're all sitting on the ringside with short shorts on, hot pants, whatever you want to call them, and a little thin halter top. She was hanging out the top and the bottom. But I got the mic down, and I kept hollering for Harry Thornton when he's up there counting money. And so he finally showed up. I held up the match about 5-6 minutes. And he come up there, and he thought I wanted to get something started. And he said, "What is it, Joe?" I said, "Sir," I said, "you see that girl sitting ringside?" "Yeah." And I said, "Would you kindly move her to another seat so I can concentrate on wrestling up here?" we had a good time up there in Cleveland, though.
Well, what did Harry do? Did he make you, did she move?
I saw her walk off.
Well, he didn't get mad at you or anything?
No, he didn't get mad at me. I was always doing something. anyway. And Ronnie would just laugh. He didn't care. Now, he'd do is just laugh and look down and walk off.
I know I've told Michael this. May have told Jerry. I don't know if you boys ever heard this or not, but we did a deal in Columbus one time. Leon Ogle was booking down there, and he set this deal up where in the main event, I was supposed to get knocked out and knocked through the ropes and all the way to the floor. And he told me, he said, when you hit the floor, he said, you lay there with your eyes closed until somebody comes and helps you. So we do the deal, and I go through the ropes, hit the floor, and I'm laying there. And it's like I say, if you've ever laid in a crowd like that with your eyes closed, I don't care if it's 5 seconds or 10 seconds, it seems like 3 hours.
Uh-huh.
And I laid there, and I laid there, and finally I hear Ronnie's voice. I thought, God, finally. He fights his way through the crowd. Well, he comes up, and rather than getting down beside me, he took his knee and he put it right in the middle of my chest. And he put all his weight on that knee where I couldn't move. And he proceeded to take his thumb and begin to choke the daylights out of me. I was coughing and gagging and fighting from under him. And I couldn't. I was like foaming at the mouth. People were screaming, oh, God, he's having a seizure. And finally he let me up. Helped me up finally, and he gets me to the dressing room. So Friday night in Atlanta, Ernesto had seen the deal, and he decided to do it in Atlanta. Well, this time Ronnie's in the ring, and I'm going to go help him. And I thought, boy, this is sweet. So I go down there to get him when he goes out of the ring like that. Well, when I get down there, he's laying on his stomach with his face covered up where I can't get to him. So I'm thinking, what in the world am I going to, what am I going to do to him? So finally, I get him turned. I mean, it was a struggle. I had to fight to get him turned over, and I finally get him turned over, and he starts getting up almost immediately, like he's in some kind of daze or something. But what I did, I reached down. I just kind of fireman's carried him. I reached down, got it, run my hand between his legs, and threw him up on my shoulder. And I'm walking back toward that stage in Atlanta, and the sucker proceeds to bite me on my back. I mean, he clamped down. Well, I got nothing I can do, so I figure to get him to quit, I'm going to shove my thumb up his butt. So I'm pushing my thumb between his legs, and he's like me, wears wrestling trunks under his pants, so all I'm doing is hurting my thumb. And the harder I pushed him, the harder he bit me. And we finally got in the dressing room. I threw him down on the steps, and we were just sitting there laughing and didn't think nothing else about it. That night when I got home to go to bed and took my shirt off, the first thing my wife said was, who bit you on your back? I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of things you can do in this lifetime, but try to explain to your wife that Ronnie West bit you on your back.
She'd be looking at Ronnie West in a whole different way.
Yes, she did. I'm telling you, he bruised me. He bit the crap out of me.
Yeah.
Ronnie told me this himself. He says, Dave Hebner, the guy that refereed for Vince for a while, he said, if you ever need help, he said, don't tell him to send Ronnie West.
I know this is not a Ronnie West story, but you made me think about Paul Jones and Nestle Royal up in Virginia. They know on a knockout deal. And he's laying up in the ring, and this black lady, she gets up there, had a dress on. She gets up there and sits straddling across his lower body part, and was trying to make him revive him. And there's a woman, and her husband's standing outside the ring. He's hollering, "Get your butt off of him!" I'm a nurse. They done the deal somewhere else, and I think Paul Jones got knocked out this time, but he went out of the ring. He's laying on the floor, and so this gay guy came up to him, oh my God, he said, I think Ness Royal said, he needs mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Ronnie was real good and very casual at it, too.
Yep.
So, anyway, he'd be dearly missed by a lot of people.
Yes, he will.
Yeah.
Oh, that goes without saying. I can't imagine. I mean, Brent and Rodney were talking about, especially any town that we go to, the circus, everybody that, when we get out and go to the malls and the stores and restaurants and give away tickets and everything, they're all disappointed because it's one of us and not Ronnie.
You're right.
Oh, yeah.
That's your run.
Yeah.
I was up there on Long Island last year, and the the clown and I went to eat lunch. And we were telling her, you know, the circus was coming and all that. And she said, I met the human cannonball last year. And I thought to myself, uh-huh. I said, what did he look like? Oh, he was about 5'6", 5'7", had white hair and wore glasses. I said, yeah, that's our human cannonball, right? Captain Ronnie. He would tell him anything.
I know.
And, you remember 2 years ago when we were all at, what was it, the Golden Corral or whatever it was, we were all at, and the TV crew came in for the reunion.
Mm-hmm.
And Ronnie met him at the door, and he was, I could tell by the way he was waving his hands and everything, he was talking about the circus. He wasn't talking about no movie reunion.
The first time.
Oh, he was the consummate promoter. I'll tell you that.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
No matter where he went, he was. Do you know the circus is coming to town? It doesn't matter what they, not how you doing. Did you know the circus is coming to town? Yeah, it's coming to town, and he was. And he said, "You know what? How many people in your family reached right for the complimentary tickets in his pocket?" And I mean, he makes sure everybody. That time, he's got a line of people in the restaurant. And the manager wondered, what's going on over here? He said, sir, you're not allowed to do this. You're not supposed to do this. He said, well, do you want any tickets? Well, if you're giving them away, go ahead and hand them over. Go ahead, I'll give
them.
How many do you need? Look, you need bigger employees. I mean, he was a consummate promoter, and there's no doubt about it.
And he never met a stranger. He talked to anybody.
No.
The first time he went to the reunion in Mobile with us, we went to Walmart for something. I don't remember what we went for, but we went to Walmart. And we were walking across the parking lot, and there was a lady came out, and she was pushing a buggy, and she's coming toward us, and Ronnie says, ma'am, said, oh, it's good to see you. He said, how's your mama and them? And the lady goes, well, mama's had a little problem with her hip, but she's doing okay. And the next thing I know, he's pushing her buggy, and they're walking across the parking lot. So we went on in, and we sat down. Well, he comes in there a few minutes later, and he said, her mama's hip's acting up. And I said, well, who was it? He said, well, I don't know. And we're standing there, and then here comes another woman across there, and he goes, pardon me, ma'am. He said, where are they filming the movie at? She said, sir? He said, aren't they filming the movie here? She said, well, I don't know. He said, well, I'd have swore you was a star. I thought they was filming the movie. He pushes her buggy, and out the door they go. I mean, he just... You know, it was just, he was always in talking garbage to somebody, and, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, guys, I'm going to call another one of our guests that was going to join us tonight. He just tried to call me on myself. I think I got him confused when I told him I'd call him, so I'm going to try and get Bill Dundee with us here real quick. The one and only superstar. They love him on the Indian reservation on Long Island. I think they think he's an Indian with a strange accent.
We made a many a trip with Bill Dundee.
One ring. That's two rings.
Now he's got caller ID and he's not going to answer the phone.
Hello?
Oh, yeah, he's not. He don't know. There he is.
Bill.
Hey.
Is Michael Norris. I got a long list. Is Michael Norris, Jerry Oates, Bobby Simmons, Rodney West, Brent West, Bill Bowman, and Joe Turner. So you're in good company.
All
here telling Ronnie West stories, the ones that we can tell on the air.
I hear you. I got about two I can tell you on there. Or in church or whatever. The rest, you know how he was. He started everything with a name and then like with his mother, and he ended with another word. You know what I'm saying?
So true, so true. And I thought my name was that for many years.
Yeah, me too. Wow. So what y'all doing? Is the show started yet, or what we doing?
Yeah, we're on the air. We're on the air.
Okay.
I'm going to say, you know, it's going to be hard out there with Ronnie gone. I'm just now going back. I'm going to leaving here tomorrow. I'm spending a few days in Atlanta, and then I'm going to Rhode Island. My first set of shows are at the end of the month, and I tell you, I'm going to miss Ronnie. Something awful.
I hear you.
He always checked on me, but I'm going to miss you, too. What are you doing quitting me in the middle of the season, man?
Hell, I don't know. I don't know. I got a young lady in my life that I didn't have before, and you know how that goes.
Yeah, I know. You got one more match in you with Lawler. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah, we got that, but that's another story.
You guys are trying to break Diamond Lil and Don Dagmar's record as most matches with each other.
I have a story about Don and Dagmar, God bless her heart. Jim Barnett, y'all know Jim, right? Y'all been around Barnett when he was running. Anyway, we had him on our team. He said, Mark Loon was the booker. He said, Mark, we need a ring rap report. We need something. We need something. TV Sunday morning. We need to liven this up. Now, all the boys look like they're drunk or hungover. He was going on, you know, how he talked. So, anyway, Darvin Dagmar was there and the other little midget. So he says, Marky, find her a date. I don't care which one, just find her a date. So there's a big, good-looking devil he picked on. Oh, your local guy did jobs on the TV. He wanted her to take Darvin Dagmar out. So he says, talks to him. He says, look, I have a date for you. It's Darvin Dagmar. And you just got to take her out. Take her. And he rambled on for about 10 minutes. The guy says, look, Mr. Barnett. He said, I'm married. He says, I can't be, you know, blah, blah, blah. He said, well, I guess if you're married, it'll be okay. So he said, okay. So the kid went off. So he calls Loon over and he says, Marky, fire him. And he fired him right there. We're not taking Darvin Dagmar off. You know who Barnett was.
Bobby had a thing for, what was her name, Bobby? Marie Laveau?
Wait a minute, I had a thing for her. She had a thing for me.
Marie Laveau, I hear you.
Yeah.
Didn't Bobby Bear do a song about that, Marie Laveau?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
A three-legged dog and a one-eyed something, I don't know. But anyway, yeah, that was about like the real Marie Laveau, too. So, have you talked to anybody at the circus? How's it doing?
It's still doing good. According to Renee, our numbers are up. I don't know. I talked to her. Whenever I called her and told her I was turned loose from the court system down here and I could come back to work. So, it's been, it's supposed to be doing well. I talked to Tom Jr. About 2 hours ago. He's coming Saturday to Cleveland, and he had lost
his
address, so I had to give it to him. But, everything seems to be good. Chris Connors is going to be on with us later on. Got to wait till he's done with the show, and then I'm going to call him, and he's going to be on with us. Chris Connors, our ringmaster.
Okay, I'm with you. As long as
we're going to have to run a bunch of wrestlers, but we'll see.
Well, you know how he is. He'll be telling you how great Chris is. That's what he does.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah, but that's all right.
So when did you first meet Ron, Bill?
1975. Yeah. We've had a lot of fun together since then.
Oh, I can imagine. Oh, man, he's that's what he lived for, was to have fun. You could he'd get down a little bit, but he wouldn't stay down for long.
No.
He made it his point to make them smile.
Yeah.
And at his own expense. And he would make people laugh at his own expense. He had no trouble with that at all. I mean, he, if he was the butt of the joke, that's fine. If he got if he got the laugh, that was the pop he was looking for. So
he never met a stranger, did he?
Well, think about the Dundies in the West. If Bill Dundee went one place, the West followed. If the West went one place, Bill Dundee followed. The same way all the way to the circus.
Right. Yes, we did. We had a lot of fun together.
So, and the good thing was it wasn't at the high of the song just because they liked us. We did draw money for them.
Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That friggin' Bill Watts. I know. Ronnie West and I made him as much money as he's ever made, the most he ever had in the last two years we was with him.
And I was there, and that was unbelievable. Everywhere. Yeah. Just unbelievable crowd.
When Bill sent him down to Baton Rouge because the money never was changing, and that was the kid that was, I can't think of his name, but anyway, you know who used to do the checking up then.
So anyway, Ronnie came in there, and
but then he comes to me the other night. He says, "What'd I do with this?" I said, "What?" He said, "The late money." I said, "I've never seen no late money in this town." No, he said, "Well, anyway, we did it that week. I said, we'll give it to Bill, I guess." So he hang on to it, and the next week, same thing. Closed up the ticket box, and he comes back with a handful of money. He says, "Same thing. People come in late. This is the late money." Jack Curtis was the guy's name. So anyway, when we got to Watts when we go up to Oklahoma every 2 weeks, he told them about the late money. So anyway, they had a meeting with Watts and old Jack, and that was the end of Jack. Oh, Ronnie, that was his job. When they walked into that ticket box, you better count that money right, because that's what he was there for, for him to count it right.
He got, and Watts fined him $50 for being $5 short.
And find him thousands. You know how it goes.
$5 short. He was fined by $50.
Yeah. Watch fined me $50 for Dr. Death running into the ring in his flip flops. Well, how the hell could I stop him running? He said, "You the booker? I don't know, but you'd no go into my ring in your flip flops." So he fined Doc. He fined me and everything. So I went, shoosh.
I'll tell you, Bill Watts wrote us just the most touching email
this past
week. I'm telling you, it was quite a salute, and Dad had tremendous amount of respect for Bill Watts. I'm telling you,
we all did that. But, I mean, you know how Watts could be.
Oh, yeah.
Praising the Lord in one breath and cussing you on the other one. I mean,
but Dad respected him, though. I mean, he respected that.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Watts was, he didn't have any favorites. He'd do everybody like that. And I think that's the reason Dad really respected Bill Watts. And he wrote such a wonderful thing.
What about deaf people through Bill Watts? The what? I think he also learned how to cuss people through Bill Watts.
Well, Ronnie knew from before we went to Oklahoma. Ronnie knew about that.
Yeah, no, he didn't. Nick Gulish, maybe, I don't know, but he knew that before he went to Bill Watts, I promise.
Yeah, because he was around Holy quite a few years as well.
There's another one. Have y'all seen that thing on the internet that says that two or three days before Randy Savage got killed? Have you seen that thing?
No.
No.
It's a story on Randy. Not really a bad story. But for all you people that's out there, I'd like to clean up or tell you the truth on one of the things that's in there. Y'all know me and Randy had the fight in the parking lot, right?
Right, right, yeah.
Right. So it says, back then, or I guess Lanny wrote this, I don't know, but it says, Bill Dundee and Randy going to a fight outside a diner. Not true, that was another time. Then the dog bit Randy, but that's another story. But the one I got into with him where he sucker punched me was outside a gym. So I thought, if I get to the back of this car, I'll restore order, because I had a pistol in the back of the car. So I did get to the back of the car. There was Pez Watley, Randy, Thunderbolt Patterson, and Angelo Poffle. There was four of them and one of me. So I thought, we'll restore order here. So anyway, I did. I got the pistol out, and Randy jumped over my back, and Angelo was standing in front of me. So when I cocked the pistol, it was right at Angelo. I said, "Angelo, get your son off my back, or I'll kill you right where you stand." So Randy went, "Hey, man, fight's over." And he ran away. what the story says, Randy wrestled the gun from Bill Dundee and pistol with that is complete bullshit. Randy couldn't have done that if he'd got a baseball bat in each hand. I would have shot him. But anyway, that's another story. So that's just how, you know, I guess you're putting Randy over as a big tough dude. But he wasn't tough. Rip Rogers beat the hell out of him in the dressing room in Louisville. And nothing, you know, Randy was supposed to do this and do that. Never did nothing except took an ass kicking. And you all know Rip Rogers. He never went around saying he was a tough guy. But he was tough enough to whoop Randy Savage, I can tell you. So, for all you Randy Savage fans that listen to this program, that's the real story. Never pistol whipped me, sucker punched me, and run away. Now, when we went to court, Jerry Jarrett, I got mad at him, because Angelo met us all in court and said, hey, we need to go Broadway with this thing. We don't need to take it. I said, no, no, I want your boy in jail. They had me arrested for assault with a deadly weapon. So then I had to take a warrant for him and for assault. So we got to court and nobody wanted to get to the paper, so Jarrett said, well, just let the lawyer do all this. Anyway, the lawyer ended up throwing it out. So he dropped the charges, I dropped the charges. Then I'll be a son of a bitch if they don't hire him. Remember that deal with what y'all were? It was pretty personal to me because I was the one that got into the beef with him. And then Waller wanted to work with him, I guess, so they hired him. Then Vince hired him, and the rest is history.
Well,
here's the other thing.
He had an altercation even earlier in his career in 1976. They were he was still Randy Poffa then, but he and Landon and Angelo were working here in Mobile. And they were in a program with John Foley and Ted Heath. And they decided that they didn't like, they were getting snatched around too much, so they were trying to smuggle blackjacks into the ring, and the referee, whoever it was, discovered them and called to stop the match, and probably saved their lives, because I would imagine John Foley probably would have killed all three of them.
Oh, yeah, both them Englishmen could all wrestle. Well, all them Englishmen back then could wrestle, so they were the wrong two to pick up on, Now, Angelo, he did the 6,000 push-ups, but that's the only thing I ever knew them doing. I mean, I never had Lenny getting in a fight with anybody and whooping him, or Angelo either, but Randy had the rap of being bad, but I never saw him being bad to nobody.
No, he seemed awful. Well, Bobby, you knew him at the beginning of his career. You knew all of them.
Well, I think, Lanny, when we had the split here, Lanny, this was the first territory Lanny ever came to. He was about 19, I guess, and they brought Randy in. Randy got cut by the Phillies or whatever farm system he was in.
St. Louis.
They had monkeyed with his mind because Randy was ambidextrous. He could throw left-handed and right-handed, and they were trying to get him to pitch that way. You know, depending on who was in the batter's box, change arms and pitch. And there was, I don't know, he weighed about 100 and, he might have weighed 175, 180 pounds soaking wet first time I saw him wrestle under a mask as a spider. And he was bouncing off the walls. I mean, it was.
Well, that was before steroids.
Yeah, that was before steroids.
I don't like the man. I just didn't like him. I didn't think he was a nice human being. And he may have been. He could have been the nicest guy in the world. But any time I was around him, he was paranoid. He was very, you know, he kept talking, you know, he's gimmick all the time, bullshit. He never, you know. So I just didn't like him. He probably didn't like me either, but that's beside the point.
Well, if he's taking the gun away from you, I'd pretty much say that that's a pretty good idea that he didn't like
you. Yeah, I hear you.
But
pretty much, I think. Yeah, he run away. And not only that, they had the band parked about 100 yards away up the road from the gym, and all the rest of the boys was in. So he was a big, brave dude, right?
Pez Watley, Thunderbolt, his father, and him come down to talk to little old me.
What was the beef about?
Who knows? We're Randy. It was just, they had their own company going, and they were coming in trying to take over the towns. They would challenge everybody on their TV. They would challenge Handsome Jimmy. They would challenge me and Lawler and say they never showed up, or they may show up. They're going, just, you know, BS. So they came. I worked with Billy Robinson in a title match in Lexington. That was their home base. So they all bought a ticket. There was about 20 of them showed up. And they were going to do that. They said to everybody, well, they're going to jump in the ring. They're going to do this and Dundee's match and all that. Okay, they should have jumped in the ring. You all remember Pat Malone, old Pie Face? He was sitting at the ring in the bell with two pistols. Lou Thesz was the referee. I was working against Billy Robinson. So what were they going to do if they got in the ring? You know what I mean? What were they going to do? But when we was walking down the aisle, Randy was so freaking drunk, we'd passed him before he realized he was in the ring. He was still looking at the back, and we already went down past him up into the ring, and Randy was still looking at the back looking for us. So, I mean, they didn't want to do nothing. Never did anything. But anyway, we weren't here to talk about that son of a bitch. We're here to talk about Ronnie and everything in the wrestling business. But that's my feelings on Randy, and I just wanted the wrestling fans to know that is bullshit what he said about what he did with a pistol. He didn't do nothing except run away. Fight's over, fight's over, fight's over, and run away. It wasn't even a fight. He sucker punched me.
All in the wrestling business.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No. You know, so
I guess know they did the same thing in Knoxville with Ron and Ron Fuller and Robert Fuller and all that. They did the same exact thing to them. Ronnie Garvin and all them did the same thing and pretty much just killed that off up there. We had the opportunity to go up into Knoxville. Jordan took that over, and we had the opportunity. Actually, Dad moved up. He was actually working in Knoxville and Johnson City and all that, and then start the war, start to break out, because Dad told us about when they were up there before, about throwing M80s out of the car, and it being a gigantic war zone on Interstate 75. I mean, it was they would get the homemade M80s, and they would take and run up and down the roads, and they would get in front of this town, and we'll throw them out. And, I mean, they were having big time ribs. People, truck drivers would be on the CB radios, saying there's a war on the industry. I mean, it was, we tried to find them. Dad used to tell us these stories, so we tried to find these homemade M80s. We couldn't find them anywhere. He was such a good influence, let's just say that, because he would tell all this, and he, well, we'll stop here at the fireworks stand and see if we can find any. And so we would start bombing people on the way to the town or coming back home every night. That was a good time when we was up there. Going back and forth to Knoxville, and we went to we traveled up to Morristown and all those towns. We had a real good time up there with him.
Yeah, well,
we moved from M80s to Roman candles. We'd have them sitting out both sides of the window, bombarding Danny Davis in behind us as we was heading to town. Danny would just turn off his lights, headlights, and enjoy the show. It's amazing we didn't get arrested, because I'm telling you, that was every night occurrence. We were going through Alabama and Tennessee.
Well, that was a good old time. Yeah, good old days.
As Bo James says, you can't have fun like that anymore.
No. No.
Why don't you get a weed eater? Oh, jeez.
Well, speaking of Bo, was supposed to call in, but he is not calling in. He was having bad thunderstorms up that way. So I'm going to try and call him and see if we can get him on the line.
Yeah, Bo's old Bo.
He needs something to do. He probably has to talk about wrestling in about 15, 20 minutes yet.
Bill Dundee.
Yes, sir.
This is Jerry Oates. How many weed eater matches have you been in?
We done everything but that. We never had weed eaters, but we did everything else.
Stay away from it. I've seen it.
Yeah. When me and Bo doing that.
I'm trying to get money.
Tape we get.
Hello.
Bo James.
I'm here.
I figured you were having trouble calling in, so I called you. We've got Bill Dundee, Brent Rodney West. Who else is with us? Joe Turner's with us. Of course, Jerry Oates, Bobby Simmons, and myself.
And Bill
Bones. We were just talking about weed eater matches.
Well, that's the only match that Tennessee did not invent. Well, Bo, Billy Dundee.
I couldn't get nobody to get with the weed eater. No, the bull whips we had, but we never got to the weed eater.
Well, maybe if you didn't go to Louisiana, you may have had them in 84 in Tennessee then.
I hear you.
Oh, the homemade M80s were made by Ronnie Garvin and Mac McMurray.
That's right.
And they still throw them at each other.
There was what's the name of this gentleman that used to take the ring up there? He had them too.
Ed Sandberg.
His name. Ed, yeah, Ed Sandberg, that's exactly. He had them. He had buried them in the yard in an oil can or oil drum. Had them in the yard to keep them from blowing up.
Jeez.
Can you imagine trying to rip somebody like that nowadays?
Oh, boy, yeah. We'd be in jail, no doubt.
They could shoot you today.
Well, you could just. Ben and Dad said he's put a many a person. He said Slater was in there in the stall in one of the towns. He took an M80 and threw it underneath the stall. He said Slater come up over the wall, pants still down, going all over screaming, "I'm gonna kill you!" And I mean, he said the smoke was up. They had to. That might have been Rome. And then he had to open up the doors because there's smoke all in the place back there. Had to put fans back there. I said he was. Wild one.
Mac McMurray's got a big hole in his leg where Garvin climbed up underneath the car and waited on him to come out through one of his feet. Mac missed towns over it. He couldn't walk for a week.
The fun with fireworks. Fun with fireworks.
You know, you do that crap, man, great time. They get you for a terroristic act or something and throw you in jail and...
Hey,
Rodney.
Brett.
Rodney, yeah. Which one's Rodney, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Rodney.
You remember when we did that angle where we buried the Continental Cat?
Yes.
We brought
that. We've been trying to get a copy from that from David Woods. He needs to know what episode, you know, what tape it was. And we've been trying to get that. That was the classic. Oh, that's beautiful. We wanted that so bad because we worked hard on putting that together, all of us did. Me, Bill, and Dad, Jamie, was there. And that thing grew. I'm telling you, we went for 2 weeks. All the towels were up. And then Dirty White Boy leaves. We was ready. And then Dirty White Boy leaves after we did something with him. But yeah, that was some good times. Continental Cat Funeral. It was something.
Yeah. Jamie rode all the way from Nashville in the coffin. We borrowed the coffin from Mike Porter and the hearse, and Jamie rode all the way in it. We had some fun on the way down with that thing. But the rib came to us all. We had it packed with beer. And then the Richards stole the thing. Remember the end of it? They were going to steal the hearse and drive off. And I thought, wow.
That's right.
Hope they don't find our beer.
Did they find it?
Mm-hmm. Tommy Richards could smell beer a mile away.
True.
Oh, what you been up to?
Oh, nothing. Just laying low.
Laying low. Okay.
Waiting for the great escape.
I hear you. I've been watching you on Facebook saying you're getting it all put together or talking to this and talking to that, right?
Yeah, yeah. Getting ready to go.
The Partridge Family.
Yeah.
With that song on and put your loudspeaker on top of your bus and play that song all the way to where you're going.
let me give you a story real quick. This ain't got nothing to do with wrestling, but you were talking about that coffin one time. At the church I used to go to before I started pastoring, we had a Halloween carnival one year, and we borrowed a coffin from a local funeral home to be part of our haunted house. And we had this guy that went to church with us, and he's dead now, God rest his soul, but his name was Doyle Lawson. And Doyle was soaking wet. He didn't weigh 100 pounds, and he looked like death warmed over just looking at him. And we was breaking down the haunted house, and he said, you know, he said, I've always wondered what it'd be like to be in a coffin, you know. We'll get in it. We'll tote you. So we got him laying in this thing, and we toted it outside the church and set it down on a little walkway in front of the church. And he opened the door, and he set up. And when he set up, it was maybe just 2 seconds later, we heard something, and this loud boom. And we looked, and right beside the church, a MARTA bus and a transit bus had stopped to pick up some passengers. And a lady driving a Volkswagen van. You know, remember how flat they were on the front?
Yeah.
She ran that thing right into the back of that bus. I mean, she hit it. We went running over there to see what, you know, she said her brakes failed. I think what she did, she looked over and seen that guy set up in that casket. And of course, we got rid of everything because we thought we was all going to jail. But we, like, killed that woman.
Oh, man, that sounds like a wrestling rib.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
One time in Gadsden, Alabama, Billy and I was staying at the Holiday Inn, and it happened to be a holiday. And this girl that worked in the office up there, there was nobody staying there, and she didn't have anything to do, and she fell asleep sitting up there in the lobby. And there's another person there that's hauling a body in a hearse. And me and Bill tried everywhere in the world to get in that hearse, but this thing was locked up, and we tried everything, couldn't get in there. We could take that body and in the casket, and we could set it in the lobby while she was asleep. But we didn't get a chance to because we couldn't get in the hearse.
when we went to get the coffin of his mates, there was a little old lady. He was burying her for free. So he says to Jimmy, grab her feet and lift her out of the box. I turn around, Jimmy is running right out of the hall. He says, I'm not going to touch that woman. Anyway, we had to lift the little old lady out and lay her on the table nice and neat. And we got the coffin. Off we went down to Mobile. Jimmy finally got brave, and he got in the coffin, and he rode all the way down there, waving at the truck drivers. Oh, we had a hell of a time going down there. RPMs, me and Jimmy.
Yeah, that's the story, man. I heard about Fargo's. They pull off the interstate one time to get gas, and one of them got in the trunk, and he had his, like the trunk was open just a little bit, and one of them laying there with his arm hanging where you could see it, and there's blood all over it. And the way I heard the story is they got the gas and left it, got on the interstate, and got out of there and got up front. And they didn't get very far down the road, and the trooper pulled them over. They wanted to check the car for a body. They got a guy to call the trooper, told him it was a dead body in front of that car.
they were way before their time, too.
Oh, yeah, it's a wonder nobody killed those two. Some of the stuff that they pulled. And Don's probably still pulling that type of stuff right now. He's probably the world's oldest teenager.
Yeah, well, I talked to Bobby Fulton the other day, and he went over to see Fargo. He said, Fargo ain't doing so good. He's missing his brother.
He's been a big change in him since Roughhouse died.
Yeah, that's what Bobby talks to him all the time. Fulton, you know, he just said he's not the same guy. Just no go in him, nothing. So he's got to be, what, 80?
Oh, yeah, he's every bit of that.
Yeah, I'm thinking about 84.
Yeah, he's got to be. Well, Donnie is older than Jackie, but Jackie always portrayed the older brother, but Donnie's 86 or 87 now.
And when he started out from reunion, Donnie, he was 69 years old, and 7 years later, he's still 69.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a few like that.
he didn't want to grow old, that's for sure.
He's preserved, though. He's got enough chemicals in him. He'll outlast.
He ain't preserved.
War comes, the only thing will be left. Well, yeah. Well, after nuclear war comes, the only thing, three things left on Earth will be cockroaches, Keith Richards, and Donnie Florida.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we got a caller on the line from Alabama. I want to get on with us. The 334 exchange. Caller from Alabama, you're on the line with us. Go ahead.
Well, guys, how are y'all doing tonight?
All right.
Well, I got one question to ask y'all. I'll hang up to y'all's comments. During the time that y'all knew Ronnie West and all, what was your favorite memory of Ronnie West inside and outside the ring, and what's your funniest story about Ronnie West? Thank you.
All right. Go ahead, Bill. You've known him, well, between you and Bobby and Jerry, you've probably known him the longest.
I didn't hear what the guy said.
He said, what's your favorite memory of Ronnie outside of the ring and inside of the ring?
Outside of the ring, son, I can't tell it to you.
I was going to say, you're trying to think of one you can tell.
But when we was working for Ole, we did this little angle with the Fantastics, and the spoiler was the big bounty hunter kid, and we had the Angel, Frank Morrell, so we're getting the heat on them. So Ronnie wasn't even in the match, so he's kind of checking up. So he comes down with his suit on and all the things, so he jumps into the ring. So we throw him out the ring. He takes a bump into about the second row. So he gets up and he looks at me, and I wave him back into the ring. So he comes back into the ring. No sooner got him back in, I throw him back out again. Did this three times. So I do an old head shake to get him back in. He stood up and he shook his head like, no, I'm not doing that. So I don't know what the people thought. I'm waving my head to tell him to come in, and he's waving his head, no, I'm not doing that. And he wouldn't come back in the ring. So I thought that was a kind of cute in the middle of this heat. The referee's not coming.
What about
well,
let's
not
Joe?
Forget you that you threw me. Him off the stage in Chattanooga, too.
Yeah, yeah, we did that
threw
one,
him
too.
Off the stage.
Yeah.
He wouldn't come near you after that.
Yeah. Poor Ronnie, he took some abuse from us, from the heels. I bless his heart. We'd take bumps all over the building.
I never will forget that. I was sitting right there, and he went to the third and fourth row there on the, from the stage into the crowd out there. And then from that moment on, he wouldn't come anywhere near you. He said, I'm not coming. You'd be waiting. Come here. Come here. He said, I'm not coming over there. Forget you. He's going to throw me off the stage again. And he's standing there, and you can tell he's trying to keep from laughing.
Yeah.
He's pointing. He's got his, face covered up, the shoulder, and he's laughing. I'm not coming.
Yeah.
What about you, Joe?
Well, I don't know. I think the funny story that I like when he was down here at the reunion and the Japanese reporters were down here.
Oh, God.
Yeah. All the way back to the motel, he's kind of convincing me to go fix him up with some women.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, y'all know the rest of the story.
Bobby can finish that one. Well, I was in the van with him too, but Bobby was the closest to all that.
The two Japanese photographers, they couldn't speak good English, so Ronnie's trying to talk. You know how when people don't understand you, you just talk louder to them. So Ronnie's yelling at them, and he's trying to convince this one of these kids. He said, get you a nice American girl. You know, 14, 15, and he's got his hands out like they're going to have big breasts. And finally, the Japanese kids figured out he was talking about a girl, and they got to smiling, and they was jumping up and down and going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And Ronnie says, well, maybe if we can't find a girl, we'll find you a young American boy. And the guy, the Japanese kid goes, no. And when we got to the hotel, they were so shook up when they opened the door to the van. The kid in the seat, he fell all the way to the parking lot. He took the best bump I ever seen, man. I mean, he went all the way to the ground from that seat. Had to hurt. And Ronnie come over the seat and straddled this guy. He jumped down to the ground straddling the guy, and he was screaming at him going, "Sell it, sell it, sell it." And all the kid wanted to do was get away.
Ronnie almost got me and Bill Dundee thrown out of a Chinese restaurant a couple of years ago, and Ronnie wasn't even there. He was in New Jersey. We was talking to him on the speakerphone. Bill said, "Ronnie, you got to see this girl that's waiting on us." Ronnie starts screaming in Chinese, or what he thought was Chinese, and they all come out of the kitchen and from everywhere looking at us.
Oh, man. What about you, Jerry?
Oh, what's your favorite memory of Ronnie? I can top any of those. Just Ronnie, you know. Every time he was in the ring with Ronnie, it was, you know, like his two sons, I don't know if they've ever heard me tell this, but there were four referees in the business, and their dad was one of them. Bobby Simmons, Stu Hart, Stu Schwartz, and Tommy Young. But, you know, he was just one of the most professional guys I've ever been around in the ring. You know, we had our times in the ring, it's fun, but when it come down to business, he was strictly business. And I always enjoyed him. He was a great guy.
Yeah, he was something else. Well, I never had the pleasure of being in the ring with him. I met him when I was in the business, but he was mainly doing office stuff. He never refereed any of my matches. But I think my favorite memory of him, we were two seasons ago, I was doing Willingboro, New Jersey, was my town. And Ronnie was on the other side of the state, and he came over to spend the day with me. And this was the same day that he nearly got us killed in the shopping center or the mall at Cherry Hill by talking to eating ice cream to a girl who was on the phone with her husband at the time. But before that, we had gone to check on my permits for my town, and we were there standing in line waiting for them to, talk to us and everything. And I looked over and I noticed he was gone. I walked around the corner, and he was sitting there talking with this woman and her 17, 18-year-old daughter. And Ronnie just picked up on, from the time we walked in there, he picked up on something was wrong with the two of them. So he just walked over there. Now, this is two total strangers, and this is typical of what Ronnie was like. He walked over and said, "Ma'am, what's wrong?" And he grabbed her by her hand and sat down and talked to her. And by the time she got through telling her whole story of she had been married to an abusive husband who tried to molest her daughter, and she finally got away from him and had moved into some government apartments or whatever, and they'd cut her power off, and that's what she was down there to do, was trying to get her power cut back on, or water, or whatever it was. And Ronnie just sat there and listened to her, nodded his head, and had that, you know, that real little smile he always had on his face. And he said, "Ma'am, everything's going to be fine." He said, "You know, the Lord watches over everybody, and everything is going to be fine." And by the time he got through with her, she was laughing and cutting, didn't have a care in the world. And that was so typical of what he was like. And that'll always be my favorite memory of him, other than, you know, the crazy stories that are true about him. But that is my own personal experience with him as far as the type of person he was. He was just hard to describe the type of person Ronnie West was. All right, Bobby, your turn.
Well, one of my favorite stories involves an elevator and Gene Anderson, but I can't tell that. We were in the office. I was in the office one Friday morning, and Ronnie gets to work, and when he comes in, he's toting his little briefcase, and his right arm is like dangling. And I said, "What's the matter with your arm?" He said, "I can't move it." And I said, "What's the matter with it?" He said, "I hurt it last night." And he had been to Athens, and I said, "Well, what happened?" "Nothing." So we sat there for a while, and I mean, it was really hurting him. I'd given him some aspirin or something. Anyway, he winds up taking his shirt off, and when he took his shirt off, he was bruised from the back of his elbow to his shoulder. I mean, bad. And I said, "Ronnie," I said, "what did you do? What happened?" And he still wouldn't say a whole lot. And when I finally figured out what went on, a mark jumped in the ring. And when he jumped in the ring, he come in from behind Ronnie, and Ronnie couldn't get turned around quick enough to hit the guy. So he just backpedaled, and he backed the guy into the corner, and the guy sat down on the bottom rope, and Ronnie just was up against him where the guy couldn't move. And he said he was afraid to turn him loose and hit him, so he just took the back of his arm and beat the crap out of the guy with the back of his arm. And I said, well, didn't anybody help you? He said, they didn't even know the guy was in there. He said, I just stayed in the corner. He was Jerry talking about he was all business, man. He was, you know, he was a tough little sucker. He wouldn't take no crap off nobody. I mean, he'd joke, but buddy, when it got serious, man, you didn't have to worry about somebody having you back if he was close. He had you.
Well, absolutely. Nothing would set him off more than seeing protesters at the circus.
Well, has anybody seen the video of that?
Yeah, me.
Him? Yeah. From down in Florida, Margate. Was it Margate?
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, I've seen it.
Doing a hit Elvin.
Yeah. Right. The guy hit Elvin with the megaphone. And Ronnie
The funny part of that, is a man 100 pounds weighs more than he does, a foot and a half taller, and he's blocking him from getting a hold of the animalized activist. He's playing defense. He's right in front of him. And, I mean, he tried to come around. I thought that was the funniest thing. I said, well, I said, normally he would have turned on him. Like, get out of the way. I didn't get a hold of the man. I never will forget that. I told Tom the other day, I was talking to him on the phone. I said, guess what I saw? I said, your video is still on the Internet where you're blocking dead from trying to get a hold of that animal rights activist. And he said, he was a fast man. And I never knew how fast he could be. But for a little man like that, he can move quick. And he said, I tried my best to keep him off of him. That is hilarious. Using all those words that Bill was talking about, too, that was wonderful.
Yeah, he showed me that video, and the funny thing was, he said the guy that he was in the scuffle with had stepped out in the street and hadn't realized it, but a car was coming at him, and Ronnie Reese trying to pull him out of the way of the car and help him, and he pushed Ronnie away instead and nearly got hit by the car. What an idiot.
Yeah. Well, animal activists are idiots. They make no sense whatsoever. I have to deal with them. I mean, you can lay the facts up to them all they want. They've got their religion. That's the religion to those people. And you cannot shake it at all. They sit there and say, well, there's chains around those elephants' neck legs. And you'll show them, well, where's the chain? Oh, well, they're invisible. And then they'll walk off. I'm like, these people are crazy. Crazy. All kinds of nut jobs. Mr. Pugh jumped all over me because I confronted one. He said, you can't do that. So they'll just lay in the ground and act like you hit them. And I said, well, the ones that I went to was the paid ones from the university. The one that was paying them, they're watching her running around acting like a complete idiot. And they're standing there and said, we don't know what she's doing. I said, well, you come down here. I'm going to talk to you. And I showed them. I said, there's nothing there. And she came over there and they said, well, there's no change. They looked at her and they said, she said, oh, they're invisible. And then walked off. They went and got in the car and left her standing there. That happened in Elizabeth, Virginia.
Mr. Pugh told me that, too. He said, hey, they'll act like to hit him. I said, well, Ron West might.
That's right. He would. Especially, and if that guy wouldn't have hit Elvin Bell, he's just like in the wrestling, if somebody jumped in the ring, they've had it. Because he hit Elvin Bell, you just as well, you touched family at that point, and he was coming after you. And that's exactly what that was about. Same way. Same exact way.
Yeah. Especially considered Elvin is you know, crippled and rides a scooter and can't defend himself, you know, lands on braces and everything. But it was crazy.
He treats him like family. Because one minute he could be cussing Elvin and has told him, I'll take a chain, wrap it around that cart you're in and drag you clear around this parking lot. And then the next minute is defending him on the midway.
Yep. Yep. That was him. Well, guys, we got the granddaddy of referees here. I'm going to get him on the line with us. Charlie Smith.
Good evening, everybody.
Yeah. All right.
Good evening, everybody.
Tell us your favorite Ronnie West story.
I like the one Bobby tells about him, both of them refereeing, and he got hurt, and Ronnie come down and picked him up or something. How'd it go, Bobby?
I done told it.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, you didn't call in. You didn't have a free long distance yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you weren't so cheap, you'd listen to the whole show.
I don't listen to the whole show. I'd go somewhere for my wife.
Tell your wife to give you a bigger allowance so you can listen to the whole show.
Well, I got a phone now. I can listen to all any time I want to. 24/7. I ain't cheap like a bunch of guys at the Renegade T-shirt company. Y'all ought to mention something about Smith's Novelty Company, that good T-shirt company.
I got news for you. Renegade T-shirt's got the biggest money maker they've ever had. We're working on it. It's in the production process right now.
Oh, is it?
Yes, sir.
Well, y'all can't do nothing. You know, y'all don't know how to make a T-shirt.
Okay.
Isn't that right, Michael?
No, we're going to, the one we're creating is going to have your picture on it, Charlie, with a bullseye around it.
Why don't you only make a jury?
What?
That picture only
makes a jury. No, we ain't making a jury. We ain't got a jury. Jerry don't want nothing to do with no T-shirts.
Yeah, even on what side you were, Jerry.
He had a bad experience with T-shirts.
Oh, I know that.
I need y'all to make me some T-shirts for real.
What kind do you need?
No, I'll get with you.
I know what it is, Bobby. He wants one with that picture of him and the McGuire twins on it.
That's what I want to
put on there. I like that.
I think it'd be nice.
Oh, man.
You know, Bobby, boy, he got so cheap there at the Colorado Athletic Club. We had 3 shirts left, and Bobby sold them to this lady for $15.
No, I didn't. I got 20 for them.
Oh, did you? We lost money.
I sat there for 3. Yeah, you lost money, all right. I sat there for 3 days selling them shirts, and he'd go off and leave me, you know, and I'd be sitting there, and he had 3 sweatshirts, left size small, and I mean they were smalls too, and it got to be about 2:00 on Wednesday, and we usually threw by then. He walked off, and this lady come up, she said, "That all you got left?" I said, "Yes, ma'am," and I'm gonna make you a deal you can't refuse. I said, "You give me $20, you can have all 3 of them." And she goes, "Can I resell them?" I said, "I don't care what you do with them." She said, "Well, I'll take them." I said, "Okay." He come back and goes, "You got rid of them?" I said, "I certainly did."
I learned the hard way.
It's like I used to say, gentlemen.
It was.
Wait a minute, Charlie.
There was nobody
You ever had the pleasure working with Charlie Smith? He's deaf. He can't hear. He's going to talk over us.
No, I said Roddy West was a fine gentleman, sir.
Yes, he was.
I know him many, many years.
Hey, I'll tell you how fine a gentleman Ronnie was. He was driving his car in Florida a couple of 3 years ago, and he had been drinking, so he called the police on his own house to give him a ticket. He did. True story, Rodney. Is that true or not?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he called the guy in the tow truck to haul him out of the grass, and the guy said, "You been drinking?" He said, "I don't care about being drinking. You just pull my car out." The guy called the police.
I think we lost Rodney. Prince still with us, but we lost Rodney.
Right.
Bo dropped off too.
I got a pretty little hole.
They had
what's it?
They're talking to you.
Go ahead, Bobby.
Yeah.
Who are we? What are we doing? Are you babysitting, Smitty?
Yeah.
Oh.
My granddaughter just came in.
Oh, okay.
But
Hope's meeting.
At least you're telling everybody she's your granddaughter, huh?
Yeah, I heard that.
I tell you, man, I like y'all bunch of guys, you know it. I'm a nice, upstanding citizen.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, until you get to Dick Russell's in Mobile, then you hit on every waitress that walks by you from 8 to 80.
No, man, no, sir, I don't do nothing like that. No, sir, I am not. You had Bobby Simmons do that, sir.
Hey, Jerry.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if you ever heard this story or not, but this Michael Norris was there. He could tell you this is the truth. We were sitting at Dick Russell's in Mobile eating one Wednesday night, and Smitty was harassing this young lady that was waiting on us. And he finally told her, he said, "My wife will be down here tomorrow." And the girl says, I want to meet her." And he said, "You do?" He said, "Yeah." She said, "I ain't known you but 15 minutes, and I can't stand you. I want to know how she stayed with you 50 years."
Well, it wasn't Roddy West at the Walmart. Hollered all them women.
Yeah.
Hell, hey, how's Mom doing? Oh, God, I couldn't believe he did all that.
Let me tell y'all guys a story about my little great-grandchild. 3 years old, and he's wild as a bug.
What did he do?
And he knows he's not supposed to use bad language. And anyway, he's telling me, he says, "I went to Mr. Pete's." That's like a party palace for kids. And he says, "Papa says, I went in there and this girl followed me around." I said, "She did?" He said, "Yeah, she said she wanted to be my best friend." And I said, "Really?" I said, "Well, everybody needs a girlfriend." He says, "I stomp her head." And I said, "Now, Kai, don't talk like that now. That's not nice." And he says, "I know I'm not supposed to say bad words." I said, "Well, everybody needs a girlfriend." He says, "I'll kick her ass." I tried not to laugh, but I couldn't help it. 3 years old.
Gentlemen, I hate to leave, but I enjoyed it. Thank you for having
right,
me on, Michael. I'll see you Saturday.
Yes, you will.
Are they taking you back to home?
Yep.
What's it?
Are they taking you back to the home?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
No,
getting dark.
Yeah.
Oh, you see, you got to get in before dark, right?
Yeah, had to get in before dark, yeah. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, Charlie.
See you,
Charlie.
Good night, Charlie. I'm going to try and get Chris. I told him, Chris Connors, I'd wait till it. 9:45. I'm going to go ahead and try him. See if he'll answer the phone. We'll let Dundee harass him.
Thanks.
Michael, when you get through with all this, give me a call when it's over.
All right, I will. Still chasing people out of the tent.
Well, let's hope they had a great crowd tonight, and it started late.
Oh, really? Yeah, then that's probably it, yeah. I'll try back here in a little bit. Where are they at, Brent? Where are they at right now?
They're in Willenboro, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did that one 2 years ago. Wasn't a bad place. Except that we had this little guy. We were talking about animal rights people. This little guy showed up in Williamsboro, and he had on a little cop uniform. And he worked. He was something to do with animal control, but he was a volunteer. He wasn't like a paid officer. he was a volunteer, and he came up there, and boy, he was just ranting and raving. He was going to shut the show down and all this stuff because, you know, because nobody would let him inside the fence to see the elephants. And we kept telling him, you can't go inside the fence. I don't care what you know, who you are or what you are, you cannot go inside the fence with those animals. And he raised all kinds of hell, and we finally had to, we ended up with the mayor there to calm the guy down. You know, he was just a little Barney Fife guy, and then he felt humiliated after everybody came there and reamed him out and told him he was being stupid. He came back two nights later, or the next night, and brought his granddad kid to the show. I was glad he didn't walk over and ask me for free tickets. He's been disappointed. But that's a pretty good town. The sponsor there, they're still doing the Buffalo Soldiers or whatever it is, the American Legion or whatever it is. That's a great sponsor there. And everybody else is cooperative except that one little guy.
Well, you always run into one of those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what makes the season interesting.
Yes.
I'm glad Tom Jr. is doing Plymouth and Marshfield. He can deal with those idiot fire marshals up there that want to shut everything down. The guys wanted to shut us down in Marshfield because I can't remember what it was. We didn't have some sort of fan or something in the quarters for the sleeper quarters. Like, how ridiculous! In fact, Plymouth, the guys can't even stay there. They have to get hotel rooms for all of them because the fire marshal there is such an idiot. I'm glad somebody else is dealing with that instead of me this year. But
those northern towns are hard. The southern towns, they're easy.
Well, except in Louisiana, everybody wants a cut of the pie. You know, they want something on the table. That's the one thing great about Ronnie. Ronnie knew all those guys from him and Bill working down there with Watts. You know, he knew which police chief to go to and all that. You know, who to grease and all that stuff. We never had a problem in Louisiana. But we'll see this year. We will see. We have to call Dundee back. He knows all those same people.
Yeah, I didn't.
You wouldn't. You didn't enjoy going to
Bill Watts told me he used to pay the governor $100,000 a year to have wrestling in Louisiana. That was
Barnett
cash.
He kept people out of there.
Yeah, that was why he paid it. I mean, he kept the people out. That it was worth that, the bill, he said. It was the most scrupulous state to watch, and we wouldn't give you a break on a ticket. If they pulled you over for anything, speeding or running a red light or a stop sign, you got a ticket.
Well, what's that? That's their income.
Yeah,
Mississippi's even worse. Mississippi doesn't have any other kind of income. They've got speeding tickets in the casinos, and that's it.
Yeah,
and Joe works at the casino, so that tells you how desperate they are.
They got Joe driving the bus, so they don't let him anywhere near the money.
Joe drives the shuttle, picks up on all the old ladies down there.
I know, he picked that mama one time there. I did.
Yeah, he told me about that.
Did they tell you how that came about?
No, I wasn't.
She was down there with somebody else who was kin to her, and I was riding that person to another casino. And she's talking about being from up there, you know, and I said, really? I said, I got a friend up there that lives there, Ronnie West. And she said, you got to be kidding. I said, no, I know him and his wife both. And I said, well, I think the world of them, they're good people. And he says, really? Well, she's back there in Boomtown right now. I said, you got to be kidding. Well, she called her on the cell phone. And when I got there, we had two shuttles running in, and she walked out there and but she went to this other shuttle, the guy asked me, are you Joe Scott? And I laughed at him and said, yeah. And she got there and started hugging his neck. But anyway, I hollered, hey, Brenda,
I'm Joe.
Yeah, she told me about it. She said she saw you there.
Yeah, I was glad to see her. I haven't seen her in many, many years.
Hey, Bo James, are you still here?
No, he dropped off. I think the thunderstorm got him, Bill. He said he's
been
having bad storms there. He's been having. So he dropped off. I think he's probably afraid lightning would get his phone.
I got you.
What's the weather going to be like up there in Tennessee tomorrow?
The what?
The weather up in Tennessee. What's it supposed to be like tomorrow?
Oh, it's gorgeous. About 70 degrees sitting outside on the back patio talking to y'all. It's beautiful here tonight. It's supposed to be nice all week.
Good. That's great.
Are you back in Jackson, Bill?
I'm back in Memphis.
Memphis, okay.
Germantown. This where all the rich white folks live.
How'd you get in there? You must know
somebody. That's what I'm saying. I know somebody. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Otherwise, I'd be down in Africa.
Oh, man. I was telling before you got on with us how much the Indian reservation on Long Island loves you. They think you're an Indian with your black hair.
Yeah.
You're an Indian with an accent.
Yeah. I got the blue-black hair. You know how I got over with the chief when I first went there? Oh, wait. Oh, boy, he's not the head guy there. I walked in the office, and they're all standing there. Never said a first word, never said it was Bill Dundee, never said nothing. I just walked up, I said, I'm from the circus and I hate John Wayne. And he looked at me, then he caught it. But he never really said nothing, he just grinned. He knew John Wayne killed all the Indians, right? Yeah. Me and him got good.
Remember those Indians in Philadelphia, Mississippi? You try to get heat, and they'd just sit there. And you'd be getting riots started somewhere else. And if they got quiet, though, you better cut out whatever you're doing. To the holler, and they'd get quiet, and they'd come get you.
I don't know if I knew any Indians in Philadelphia, Mississippi.
Oh, yeah, that's a big reservation up there.
I never came to Jarrett's show.
I think his wife is Puerto Rican. He went there as an Indian.
Yeah.
Who?
I think it's White Eagle. They wrestled as an Indian.
Yeah, White Eagle. Louis Torres was his
Puerto
real
Rican.
Name. He worked
he
as
went
an
up
Indian.
There.
Yeah.
And they catered to him because he was a wrestler, but they knew right off he wasn't an Indian.
When Gypsy Joe went to Alaska with the Sheik, he went they went up there to go in the summertime. So he thought he was going as Gypsy Joe. So he was with the Sheik, the original Sheik, Eddie Farhat. So they get up there, and there's only about 8 of them on the card. And Gypsy's looking at the poster, and he said, "Where am I?" He said, "I have you as an Indian." He said, "I'm not an Indian. I'm Gypsy Joe. I'm a gypsy." So he said, "But what's my name?" So he looked at the poster, and it said, "Chief Tuna." It made old Cohart, Chief Tuna. He didn't want to be Chief Tuna. He got mad at him. Not only an Indian, he called me Chief Tuna. That was another tough old boy in his day.
We got Rodney back with us. You left him for a minute, Rodney.
Sorry about that.
You got to go.
We barely have inside plumbing.
I got
cell phone,
sir. I got Bo, too.
I got mine plugged in,
too. Did you have to leave, Bo, and Missy make you wash dishes or what?
Oh, I don't know what it is. All these storms we've had the last two nights, I keep dropping calls.
Well, Bo, can you hear me, Bo?
I can hear you, Bill.
All right. Did you ever talk to that Dexter dude?
No, I haven't talked to him yet.
But he emailed me again and wanted to know if I could get Jamie and this guy and that guy. I thought, boy, he doesn't want Jamie, but whatever.
He's running the same time the fair's in town.
Yeah.
I don't know why you'd run a town against the fair when it comes once a year.
I don't either. Unless you was part of it, but he's not part of it, is he?
No.
He's just set up across the street, mate. He thought he would get the overflow from the fair over there and watch that. He set up in the parking lot. He set it up in the parking lot and have the megaphone out there. Hey, come over here, free wrestling match is over here. We got Bill Dundee.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I got all that beat. You know the
like the sideshow carnival. Step right up and see Bill Dundee. He's up here.
You know the little outlaw group that runs with the fake Doink the Clown down here in Mobile, usually around the same time that the reunion is?
Yeah.
They're holding matches in a Golden Corral.
In a Golden Corral?
In the Golden Corral. I guess they're going to have
the restaurant?
A salad bar. Yeah. Instead of a weed eater match, they're going to have a salad bar match. They're going to beat each other with tomatoes and stuff.
See, Bill, you're experiencing food matches. You hit that consistency in matches. You call down there and get hooked on that salad bar match.
Oh, yeah. They tried to copy that extravagant.
You have Thousand Island dressing with that, mister. Okay, how do you like that? From Beach, you really mean it. Here you go.
Bill will fight in the concession stand as long as it's not his town and he has to pay for everything.
Yeah.
Colorado, Mississippi, we went in the concession stand and he says, get out of here, mate, I'm paying the bills.
Yeah. No fighting in this one. Yeah.
Well, guys, I'm going to try Chris again real quick and see if I can get him on the air. If not, we'll just finish it up with us.
Did everybody get to tell their favorite story yet? Did I miss out on that?
What was that?
No, you got one, tell it.
Well, the guy was asking about our favorite outside inside, and I thought, well, my outside the ring was that when no matter what Dad did, we always wanted to do things. So if he referee, we act like when we was growing up, we referee. Or we wrestled. And then he got into the office, and he was, you know, he had the book. He had the book. He helped book the towns and had lowly consistent books. So he had a book. So me and Brent would see sitting there watching the book on the two tables. So we'd go get our own stuff, and we'd sit there with him. And we'd go make our own matches, too. So one day he comes in, he said, I went and bought y'all a book, so you want to use that old notebook paper. He said, so y'all need to get to work. So we go in there, and we'd write down all the towns, and we'd make our own matches. So we'd come in there, and we'd show him what we got. He said, well, heck, this is all returns for the entire month. He said, you can't do this. You can't do that. He said, let me ask you, would you want to see the same show every single week? He said, well, you want to. He said, we say, no, we'll see nobody else does either. He said, go in there and try it again. So slowly but surely, he was teaching. We would have our own TV formats. We would do our own. And so slowly but surely, he was teaching us little by little, just by copying exactly what he was doing. And then my favorite funny story, it didn't happen in Alabama, but he told a story where he was in Raleigh. And normally they would run Raleigh on one night, they'd have TV the next night, next day. So he decided he's going to spend the night. So he checked into a hotel, dropped his bags off, and decided, I'm going to get something to eat. So while he was gone, Jerry Briscoe, who was also staying in the same hotel.
This is a funny story.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jerry Briscoe convinces the maid that that's his room, and he's locked his keys in to let him in. So she unlocks it, and back then the bed was really close. They had enough space for somebody to walk between the wall and the bed. So Jerry Briscoe slid down between the bed and the wall and laid there and waited. So Dad comes in. He says, I come in, and I go and use the bathroom. And back then, in those times, Dad slept all natural, if you know what I'm saying. So he goes in. So he goes in. He says, I messed around. It had to be 30, 45 minutes I messed around. Said, I didn't know anything. I sat there and I watched the TV. I flipped through the stations. He said, then I decided it was time to go to bed. He told us to go to sleep. So I reached over, turned the lamp, pulled the street covers up on me. He said, I laid there for about 10 minutes or so. And all of a sudden, he said, I felt something grab my arm. He said, I thought somebody was in there to kill me. He said, I was screaming. He said, I had to wake everybody up in the hotel. He said, every time, he said, I knocked the lamp off the table. Every time I'd get loose, Jerry would grab a hold of me, pull me across back towards him. He said, I got up. I said, I knocked the TV off the side of the thing, turned over every single table in there, finally grabbed the door, stepped outside, ran down the hallway together. There's somebody in my room. There's somebody in my room. He said he came back. And, of course, you have to remember, he's all out there all naked for all to see. He said, I was scared. The two ladies that was in the hallways were scared, and Jerry Briscoe's laying in the floor laughing so hard he could barely breathe. He said he gets up, he goes into TV the next day. He said, they were asking him, they said, hey, Marty, how was your night? And he said, what do you mean, how was your night? How come you got all them carpet burns and bruises all over you? What happened? Were you in a fight? What's wrong with you? Did you get drunk and fall down? They're all laughing at him, and he said, no, that so-and-so, Jerry Briscoe, those words, that word that Bill said, did that to me. And he said, from now on, I will check every room I stay in from now on for something like that.
It's funny.
Oh, man. All right, well, give me just a second. Let me try Chris again one time. If he doesn't answer, I got Tom Jr. on waiting, too, so we'll get him on with us.
Hello?
Chris Connors.
Hey. Sorry I missed your call before. I just ended the show just now.
Yeah, I figured that. Brent said that you guys started late, so I got Brent Rodney with us, got Bill Dundee with us.
Superstar.
Chris Connors, how are you?
How you doing, mate? How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, mate.
I'm sorry I interrupted the host. Go ahead, tell me who else is there. It's great to hear from everybody.
Yeah, got some folks from the wrestling business. Joe Turner, Bobby Simmons, Jerry Oates, Bo James is with us. Guys that you don't know, but we give them free tickets.
Fantastic. Sounds like, yes.
Oh, I got Tom Ernesto Jr. holding too. Let me get him on with us.
All righty.
What's going on? My phone's spinning. Go ahead, Chris. He'll hook on in a minute.
All right. Well, I'm trying to call to you before.
About the same
so.
Time, right? Yeah. I don't know what's going on with Junior. He's got a cheap phone, I think. But
Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, good. How you been?
I'm doing real good. How was the show tonight?
The show was really good tonight. We held it up quite a bit. I think we started about 8:15, and just came out of the big top. I'm all sweaty, and I got the Raymaster outfit on, but I figure I'd give you guys a shot one more time before you ended your program.
Well, we appreciate you.
Well, tell us your favorite Ronnie West story, Chris.
Well, you know, Ron was a hell of a guy. Really was. I got the pleasure of knowing him, not as long as some of you gentlemen, but I tell you, 12 years of this guy that I consider to be like a father to me. He really was. I called him Dad. That was the running joke. My brother works here this year. He was here a few years ago. He came back. And, you know, the first thing on my brother's mouth is, I can't wait to see Dad. And that was the beginning of the season. So, you know, that's how Ron was when we all found out. Unfortunately, I found out the hard way of Ron's passing. The show was on. I just finished announcing the Tigers, and I came out of the big top, and my brother, you know, he won't tell me right away. Oh, Mr. Pugh needs you to know something. And it was very tough for me to get back in that big top. I looked at my sound man, I passed him, and he goes, are you okay? I guess I zoned out completely. But I know darn well that Ron would have told me, well, you know, suck it in and get your butt out there and do the darn show. And that's what I did. You know, I gave him my best. And but I had a lot of great times with Ron. And I'm very, very, very happy that the last town we did together, I got to talk to him for a long time. We had a lot of conversations, a lot of joking around. And on that Saturday and Sunday, he was in great spirits doing his joking around with everybody. The thing about the Cole Brothers Circus and Ron West, he was the family. He was part of the family. And to me, no disrespect to all the marketing directors here at Cole Brothers Circus, but Ron was the backbone. And he really, everybody looked up to Ron. Even their bosses, Miss Renee Story, she depended a lot on him. You know, they might have had their little fights here and there. But, you know, that's the kind of person he was. And the thing here at the circus, when people found out that he passed on, it didn't matter if they spoke English or not, or they were the guy that cleaned up the elephant poop or put the tent up or working the globe with the motorcycles. He affected everybody. He really did. Yeah. Everybody was really, really upset. This Saturday on the first show, the 1:30 show will be dedicated to Ron West. Mr. Pugh, the owner of the Cole Brothers Circus, wanted me to wait to the day of the funeral so we have our own tribute here at the Big Top. So I will say a few words and a moment of silence, and then we'll blow the whistle and put on the show.
Good.
We really appreciate that, Chris. We really
I know. You know, it's like tonight when I knew I was running late to do this, I said there's some way I have to do that radio show because Ron will, you know, I'll never let it down, you know, and that's how I was with him, and that's how he was with me, and a lot of great memories, and that's what we all have of Ron West. You know, he was a heck of a guy. The old story is with me, and I posted on Facebook already, and this is a true story. Every town Ron booked, market, I should say, I had people that come up to him and come up to us and say, where's Ron, Mr. Ron, you know, the circus man? Where's the circus man? And even that last town, we had four people ask for him. So that's the impact he had on millions of people in my book.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Chris, I know you're traveling tonight, so let me let you go. I appreciate you joining us. You be careful out there, and I'll see you at the end of the month.
Okay, very good.
I'll see you in Newport.
All right, will do. I can't wait to see you. I haven't seen you in a long time, so.
Yep. Well, be careful. Oh,
Chris Collins, take care, man.
Yes, you too, okay? Take care of yourself.
All right, man. Love you, brother. Take care.
I love everybody. I'm a big guy. I have a lot of love for a lot of people. And speaking of which, I have a young lady trying to text me right now. So that's showbiz.
Take care, Chris. Well, guys,
all right. Thank you
time.
Very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Have a good night.
Thank you. Brent, Rodney, Bill, Joe, Bill Bowman, Bo James, Charlie Smith, and, of course, Jerry and Bobby. I appreciate you guys. I will be out of pocket next week, so we're not going to do a show next week, but we'll do one the following week, and we'll see what we come up with. Brent, again, Rodney, I appreciate you letting us do this for your dad. I think I speak for all of you.
I love the guy to death. I can't, you know, there aren't enough words in this world to express what Ronnie West meant to me and all of us, I think. And there'll never be another one. Never be another one like him.
Nope.
No, he certainly did it his way.
Yeah, he did.
Boys, I'll see you Saturday in Cleveland, okay?
All right.
We'll see you then.
We'll see you, Bill.
Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you so much for doing this for us.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody. Bobby, good night. I'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, man. Good night, Jerry. Good night, Mike.
Good night, Bobby.
Call me, Michael.
All righty.